cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello and welcome, everyone, to another episode of Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Mercer, joined, as always, by my good buddy, John Mariano. How are you doing tonight, John?
Oh, I feel out of sorts. I feel out of time.
Do you now?
I do. I feel like it's today, but it feels like maybe yesterday or maybe over 100 years ago at this point.
It might be 1885. That's right. We're talking about one of the greatest movie series of all time, Back to the Future, and specifically Back to the Future 3. I'm sure we'll cover Back to the Future 1 at some point. We got Power of Love is on that soundtrack. Michael J. Fox doing Johnny B. Goode, even though he didn't sing it, or he kind of played on it, but we got a few tracks anyway. There's a Lindsey Buckingham song on that soundtrack too, but I wanted to go, this is my pick this week, folks, and I wanted to go to Back to the Future 3, all the way back to 1990. This is one of my favorite movies, and actually probably, truth be told, my favorite of the three. I think this is a really underrated movie. I know when a lot of people are talking about the best of the trilogy, they're not talking about Back to the Future 3, but I love, especially coming after 2, which is really, it's really cool, first of all, because they revisit the first movie and all, but it's very convoluted. There's a lot going on. Back to the Future 3 is very simple. We're back in the Old West. They got a very simple goal. You got some wonderful performances, especially from Christopher Lloyd and Mary Steenburgen. And when we talked about doing the show, John, way back when, I said one of the first songs I got to do is Double Back by one of my favorite bands of all time, ZZ Top. John, you've seen Back to the Future 3, I'm sure. What are your thoughts on that film?
So it's weird. My relationship with this movie, I liken to Karate Kid Part 2. My out of the theater experience with it was I felt let down. I felt kind of betrayed. It wasn't exactly what I hoped it would be or thought it would be. And for me, it was a lesson in expectations early in life. Because where my expectations were or what I expected to be coming off of the second film was I thought we'd get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it went smaller. And what I appreciate as I get older, and I say this about both this and Karate Kid Part 2, is it's such a well-crafted film, right? Like, I would argue that Karate Kid Part 2 is better than Karate Kid Part 1. And I would argue that this movie, I won't argue it's better than the first movie, even though I think as a whole film, you could make that argument. I have such a nostalgia for that first movie. I don't know that I could get on the same boat you're on here, but I definitely feel like it's better than the second movie. And that's not like I feel like the second movie is any worse than the day I saw it. I feel like my love for this movie has grown exponentially. And what it does with time travel and the way it tells the story and really closes out the Emmett Brown character, I feel like it turns the trilogy on its head, where the trilogy you felt like was about Marty because Marty's the first character you meet. You meet Marty, if you're paying attention, in Doc's house, in his home. And that story tells the tale of who Doc Brown is, not who Marty is. Yeah, we get Marty plays loud music. That's what we get out of that opening scene in Back to the Future. But we see how meticulous Doc Brown is, how obsessive he is. We see all the clocks. We see how smart he is, because of how the dog food comes out with the Rube Goldberg machine. We even have hints of things he's done lately with the news story on the TV about the plutonium being stolen. So all that scene is to inform about Doc Emmett Brown, and the series closes with him finding happiness and closure with time travel.
Well, and to further your point, John, the first movie, you have two separate storylines, an A and a B, but it's almost like one in one A, because both are equally important. One is, of course, Marty trying to get his dad, to hook up with his mom. But the other equally as important is Doc Brown trying to figure out, 1955 Doc Brown trying to figure out how to get 1.21 gigawatts of electricity into a flux capacitor. And that's equally as important. So He was a main character right from the get-go. Two, has so much going on. And like you said, it's expertly crafted. It's a wonderful movie. But when I say that I think I like Back to the Future 3 a little better, it's not because it's a better movie. It's because I think I have more emotional connection to it, because my dad used to take me to movies and he loved Westerns. So the fact that it's an old kind of classic Western really kind of got to me. And that's why I maybe favor it more than the first one. But they're both, I think, up there with, perfect movies.
I also feel like from pop culture references right off the bat, Once Upon a Time in the West with Seth MacFarlane and Charlize Theron shows Doc Emmett Brown. It takes place in the same town almost because they go to his barn. There's been a couple of commercials that reference it. There's been a lot of references to the DeLorean in the Old West in things, or even the time traveling train. And, beyond that, this is the movie that got Mary Steenburgen on my radar as an actress. And she's done some incredible work since this movie. But in this movie, I absolutely fall in love with her as Clara.
It's hard not to. It's impossible not to. She's absolutely wonderful. And her chemistry with Christopher Lloyd is just off the charts. Perfectly cast, perfectly executed. We really got to give a lot of props to Robert Zemeckis, who at this time in film history was really kind of unmatched in terms of being a filmmaker. The movie he did right before Back to the Future 2 and 3, which he shot back to back, was Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is such a monumental achievement in filmmaking on its own.
My biggest gripe with Zemeckis' career overall, but I feel like, especially later in his career, he fell so in love with pushing technology further, he eventually didn't pay as much attention to story. He did Beowulf, he did The Polar Express.
Yep.
And those movies, while they push the technology, lack some of the emotion of his earlier work.
Oh, 100%. It lacked any human emotion. He's almost, James Cameron's almost kind of trekking down this road too, with the Avatar movie, so focused on the technology, not maybe focusing as much on the character or the stories. I agree with you. That's when Robert Zemeckis kind of fell off the rails. He came back in the 2000s with a movie called Flight with Denzel Washington that I was a big fan of. But other than that, or The Walk, I believe, about the tightrope walker between the two towers, that was also a good one.
I haven't seen The Walk, but I have seen Flight. And if you haven't seen Flight and you're listening to this, please go check it out, because it is, it does show you that Zemeckis still has it when he has the material to bring it to, and he's not falling in love with technology and pushing the technology first.
That's right.
But to capitalize on Corey's point, because I kind of stomped on Who Framed Roger Rabbit a little bit, Bob Hoskins in that movie, and I know we're not talking about this today, but Bob Hoskins puts on one of the greatest performances in movie history, acting against nothing for the duration of the movie. And is so believable and grounds that world in ways it needs to be grounded, that it sells what Zemeckis is doing with the technology and with Roger and 2D animation in a 3D world.
How many scenes did Bob Hoskins actually have a human co-star that he could play against in a scene? 90% of that movie, he's talking to nothing, or like a pair of handcuffs on a set of wires.
Because even when he's talking to Jessica Rabbit, like Kathleen Turner's doing the voice, maybe off stage, but she's not there physically with him when she hires him. Like really, really look at it. He interacts with Baby Herman. Even the gun he fires is a cartoon.
Yeah. Except for one shot where you could tell it's actually kind of a prop they kind of made to look like a cartoon. Right. And I think at that point, they're just like, we're so far behind with the animation, just leave it. No one will notice.
But it works wonders, and my lord, that movie still holds up. Check that out on Disney Plus, or if you're at it's on Disney Plus everywhere. I was gonna say if you're out of the country, Hulu, but it's the other way around. Hulu only exists in the States, but Disney Plus is everywhere, right?
That's right. Yeah, but we're not talking Roger Rabbit. We'll maybe save that for another show. We're talking Back to the Future. We're talking ZZ Top, one of my favorite bands of all time. I just saw ZZ Top back in April. Cheap Trick opened for him. tremendous show. They didn't do this song in concert, but this is kind of at the tail end of their renaissance. You know, they were just a little old boogie blues band from Texas, and then in 83 they released Eliminator, and it had like electronic drums, and it had a more pop sensibility and became a massive selling hit. And then Afterburner came after that. It sold pretty well, but not as well. And then the third album was Recycler. And this song came out before Recycler was released, but it is featured on the album Recycler. It was the lead single from Back to the Future 3 back in May 1990. I've been waiting a long time to get into this one, John. Here we go. This is Double Back by ZZ Top.
So people might be wondering, I just want to put it in some context, when this song is played during a Western. And, you know, even with the time travel and everything, this song is played over the credits, but has a lot of the vibe of a movie where a DeLorean is existing in the Old West. Like, it's modern Southern rock with a country twinge to it that I think really suits the moods and the theme of the movie.
And you are correct. This version we're listening to is not featured in the film until the end credits, but they do play kind of a country version of it in their cameo at the fair that Marty goes to. There's a band, and that's ZZ Top. They got their big beards, and they're playing kind of a hillbilly acoustic version of kind of the main riff of this song.
That's pretty wild. I never realized they were playing this song. I knew they had the cameo in the movie. I think it's always really special when you can get one of the bands from the soundtrack to show up in your movie, especially organically like that. You know, I've never been a huge ZZ Top fan where I've sought their music out, but I've also never turned their music off when it's on the radio. So, and that's kind of how I look at them is, for me, I love the ambiance that ZZ Top gives a room when you're looking to chill and have a drink and hang out. And Corey, what are your experiences with ZZ Top?
Oh, man, Eliminator for me back in 83, I would have been, 9 years old. I remember listening to that album, like, in gym class. And, of course, the videos were huge, right? Legs, Sharp Dressed Man, Give Me Some Lovin', or Give Me All Your Lovin', excuse me. Got Me Under Pressure. Such a huge album, and I just love those first three albums. Then I got their greatest hits, and I got into like the old 70s stuff, like The Grange, Cheap Sunglasses, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I just love this band. They made the blues cool. They turned it into party rock, boogie rock, if you will. And it's absolutely fantastic. And Recycler is a really underrated album. I just got it on vinyl, and there's some great stuff on here. But I remember when Double Back came out in 90, and the movie was big. And of course, their video was really cool. It was number one on the album Rock Tracks. It was kind of all over the place. A very big single for ZZ Top in May 1990.
One of my earliest memories, I was in eighth grade. It may have been around 1990. My brain doesn't think too well. You know this, Corey.
Yeah.
But somewhere in those late 80s, early 90s, I was in eighth grade. And my buddy Doug got a new haircut, and he had, you know, kind of a mullet, but he had shaved the sides, and he had shaved Z's into the side of his head, like lightning bolts.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked up to him and I go, oh, that's cool. You got like lightning bolts in your head. And he goes, no, these are Z's. I go, what do you mean Z's? And he pointed to each side of his head. He goes, Z, points to the other side of his head. He goes, Z, and he slaps himself on the top of the head, top. And he was such a big fan of ZZ Top. It was the first time I remember anybody getting a haircut that referenced a band. My God, it must be a pretty pretty big deal. And then I saw like the legs video. I'm like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. And I just want to kind of get to the song here, like just the theme of Double Back, you know, was kind of the theme of Back to the Future 3. Because if you remember at the end of part two, Marty had kind of set the timeline right with the almanac. Doc was in the DeLorean and Marty was about to jump in. It got struck by lightning and he took off. Marty thought he was vaporized. And then Joe Flaherty drives up with a registered letter from 1885 from Doc saying, don't come find me. I'm fine here in the Old West. And then, of course, Marty finds out that shortly after writing that letter, Doc was killed over a matter of, what was it, like $3 or something?
By Buford Mad Dog Tannen.
That's right.
Played brilliantly by Thomas Wilson, who played the bully in all three of these movies.
The unsung hero of Back to the Future. Absolutely.
I mean, I will sing him all day long. I love me a good 80s bully. And he's at, if not near the top, he might be at the top. There's one other guy that could give him a run for his money. I think you know who I'm talking about.
Actually, I got a few in my head. You'll have to help me out here. Yeah.
Oh, the guy I'm thinking about has a TV show right now that we're waiting for the final season to come out.
Ted Lasso?
Yeah. the big bully, Ted Lasso.
That's right. So mean to Nate.
No. I am talking about Johnny Lawrence.
Ah, yes.
But Johnny Lawrence, William Zabka. Oh, I keep wanting to call him Johnny Lawrence, but William Zabka played the bully in Just One of the Guys, Back to School, and The Karate Kid.
Oh, I forgot he was in Back to School.
He was a bully in that too. So I do argue that he has the edge because he has three movies where he bullies main characters. And in one of them, he very awkwardly and would get canceled today, but he beats up a girl who is cross-dressing as a guy because he's such a son of a bitch in movies. William Zabka, thank you for a lifetime of having somebody to root against because you're so charming and wonderful as the bully we love to hate.
Absolutely. And fantastic job. And all I'm thinking is we got to do Twist and Shout from Back to School someday.
And going back to Tom Wilson, Tom Wilson is now, I think he's on the Goldbergs. Is it one of his latest pieces of work? He plays totally different character than Biff Tannen. And by all accounts, I've seen him in interviews. Seems like one of the nicest human beings on the planet.
That's what you hear from everybody. Like, I know Leah Thompson's like, he's literally the nicest person on the planet.
And you know, not Biff Tannen at all. He's also not as slow-witted as, like, bullied Biff Tannen when they change the future and, like, he gets his comeuppance. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very witty in an interview. I've seen him sing songs about what it's like to be the bully. Just wonderful and energetic. And all the interactions I've seen and heard about with him with fans have been terrific.
You want an underrated Tom Wilson movie? Go back to 2009 and a little movie called The Informant with Matt Damon, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Really fun movie.
Who does he play in that? Because I've seen that.
He plays one of the agents that is dealing with Matt Damon's character.
Oh, man. We got to do that movie so I can rewatch it. So I have an excuse to rewatch it.
Absolutely.
Because, I loved that movie when it came out. And maybe I didn't realize it was him, or maybe, again, old man memory is setting in.
It was a while ago. But let's get back to ZZ Top and Double Back. Let's double back, if we will, to Double Back. All right, I know you said you don't really seek out ZZ Top, but man, Billy Gibbons vocally, I just love that timbre in his voice and the way he sells a line. Like, he sounds just so fucking cool.
Yeah, no, Billy Gibbons' voice is one of the more underrated ones in rock because it's what you picture a rock star. And, you know, ZZ Top I don't think hits the mainstream the way they should, because they're known for their beards and their look.
Yeah.
Right. But underneath that are some of the most talented performers rock has seen. And if you just listen to the music, and that's what I mean, like, I've never shut them off. And there is music I like from bands I like where eventually I'm sick of it and eventually I turn it off, and maybe it's a product of not over listening to them in my life, but I've never turned ZZ Top off of anything or walked out of a room because they were playing.
All amazing musicians. And we're going to come up after the chorus on a Billy Gibbons guitar solo, and you'll discover why he was one of Jimi Hendrix's favorite guitar players.
I just want to go back to Billy Gibbons really quick. I was trying to think, there was something recently I watched Billy Gibbons on. Have you ever seen the show from Daryl Hall, Daryl's house from Hall & Oates?
I've seen snippets of it, yeah.
So Daryl Hall from Hall & Oates has a barn he's converted into a studio and invites incredible rock stars from all around the world who were his friends to come and jam. And Billy Gibbons shows up and they jam with that Daryl Hall's band.
Mm-hmm.
And look, you may or may not, and I'm talking to the audience more so than you right now, Corey, but you may or may not like Daryl Hall or Hall & Oates, but regardless of how you feel, if you're listening to us, you love this music. You love music in general, but music like this you love, and they do jam sessions that are every bit is worth to check out. So if you get a chance to check out Daryl's house, I think you can find it on YouTube. Watch actual full episodes. The Billy Gibbons thing really will make you appreciate him as an artist if you don't already. But that's where I found my appreciation for him.
I think they do LaGrange as part of that episode, don't they?
Yeah. They do.
Yeah.
They do.
For the record, I love Daryl Hall and I love Hall & Oates. So yeah, it's all good to me.
So I went down a rabbit hole for a few weeks last year and just binged the hell out of the show. And Corey, if you get a couple of days off and you're like, I got really nothing I want to watch on TV, pop this on in the background and just give it a listen. Even if you're doing chores around the house, it's good for that too.
Oh, I'm absolutely going to do that. And actually, Billy Gibbons was also on Sammy Hagar's show way back when, talking music. And I think Sammy actually did a song with him.
Sammy has a show?
Yeah. It's on like Axe TV. I can't remember what it's called, but I know, Blues and Wine, I think it might be called, but
I gotta check it out. I like these kind of jam shows where it's like just rock stars getting together and jamming out together.
Yep, it's called Sammy Hagar's Rock and Road Trip, and I saw he did an episode with Def Leppard that was really good, but he did one with Billy Gibbons, and I think they actually jammed out to Waiting for the Bus, which is a great classic old ZZ Top song.
Nice.
I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Dusty Hill a little bit, the bass player and background singer. He sang lead on a few songs, like Tush was his big song, but he sadly passed away not that long ago. And when I had tickets to ZZ Top a couple times, Once they were opening for Aerosmith, they had to cancel those shows because Steven Tyler fell off a stage in Sturgis and broke his shoulder. So I didn't get to see ZZ Top then. The other time, ZZ Top was playing in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan on the night of the Grey Cup, which is the Canadian Football League championship game. I believe Saskatchewan was actually in that game. So not a lot of folks went to the ZZ Top concert that night. Had tickets to see them again in Moose Jaw. COVID shut that show down. And then, unfortunately, during COVID, their Dusty Hill passed away. So when I saw him, it was actually Elwood Francis, his old guitar tech, playing bass for him. And ZZ Top is still great with Elwood Francis, but it's just missing a little bit of that Dusty Hill magic. When I heard him singing harmony to Billy there just in that section, I kind of miss Dusty Hill a little bit.
Yeah, I miss Dusty Hill a lot. They, for a long time, I just kind of saw them as one entity. Like, if I were to even draw them, I would draw them with one body and two heads coming out, because I couldn't unsee them together. Their partnership was so rich for me. I mean, part of it was definitely their look, mm-hmm. but the way they sang together, the way they played together, the way that they harmonized together, you don't get it this well done with most bands, and more popular than ZZ Top, you don't get it.
No, that's true. And I would, if anyone's out there listening to this right now and they're liking what they hear, watch the Netflix documentary, Little Band from Texas, The Story of ZZ Top. And the three of them actually play some of their older songs, just kind of in an informal setting. They just get together and they jam it out. They do LaGrange, they do Legs, they do so many. They even do a couple of cuts from their first album. That actually has been released on CD digitally and on vinyl as the album Raw. And there's just some great versions of these old songs. Double Back's not on there, unfortunately, but you're going to get a lot of good stuff on there, like Waiting for the Bus and Tush. And of course, LaGrange, probably their biggest song. But I would highly recommend you check out that documentary and check out that album. Really, really great stuff. And the last stuff they ever recorded with Dusty Hill.
So I'm the movie guy, and, you know, we're talking Back to the Future Part 3, and there are two players that we really haven't talked about yet, and we're getting to the back quarter of the song, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Their chemistry in these three movies, you know, inspired Rick and Morty as an homage or ripoff of Back to the Future in a lot of ways, but countless other things. It inspires the Avengers to time travel in Avengers Endgame. You know their story, their chemistry, it doesn't work without these two actors. Michael J. Fox, at the height of his powers, coming off of playing Alex P. Keaton on Family Ties and spinning it into a great career as a movie star before returning to TV with Spin City, you know, had a great acting career and was a huge movie star people forget because of these movies.
And remember, he was always the first choice, but he didn't initially get the part. Went to Eric Stoltz, and they actually shot a few weeks with Eric Stoltz and realized this doesn't work. Like, he was just playing it totally different, had no chemistry with Leah Thompson or Christopher Lloyd. And they made the decision to scrap those first few weeks of shooting and wait for Michael J. Fox to become available.
Well, and it wasn't just they had to wait for Michael J. Fox to become available. They had to shoot around his schedule for Family Ties, which changed everything. They had to reshoot half the movie, you know, and then they had to shoot around his schedule and fly him back and forth You know, and Zemeckis had to get special permission from Spielberg, who was the producer on this movie, to do that. And Spielberg asked him, he goes, do you think the movie works without him? And he said, no. And that's, you know, what it took. And whatever, it's in documentaries. I'm sure when we talk about Back to the Future, we'll do a little bit more research on that part of this. But whatever magic wand they had to wave to make it happen saved this franchise and made this franchise, because it wasn't really ever going to be a franchise until it made so much money they then had to write two more movies and figured it out wonderfully. And then Christopher Lloyd as Doc Emmett Brown, and playing Doc Emmett Brown at two significantly different times in his life, especially in the first movie, but then how the character evolves over three movies, because I don't think Marty evolves that much.
Mm-hmm.
But Doc, you know, Marty learns to that it's okay to run away from a fight when somebody calls you chicken. That's about Marty's evolution throughout these three movies.
Yeah, Marty has an arc, but it's kind of shallow.
Doc Brown goes from being obsessive about time travel and making a name for himself and being okay with being lost in time as long as he's enjoying his life with someone, and finds love in the third movie and finds purpose in the third movie. And this is the culmination that if you look at Doc Brown from the first movie and the growth he has to the third movie, it's one of the best character arcs in movie history.
That's big words, but I'm not going to argue with you. I agree.
I say that going, everybody today, and you hear this a lot from pundits and stuff, especially when they talk about things like Star Wars, that things need to be planned out.
Right.
You need to plan things out. And part of the reasons why people look at the sequel trilogy of Star Wars as a failure is there was no grand plan for anything. Yeah. Well, I got news for you. Back to the Future is one of the most successful franchises of all time. One of the most successful trilogies, especially now that most of the other trilogies of its time have extended far beyond three movies, right? It stands alone as a it doesn't stand alone as a trilogy, but it stands on its shoulders of being a trilogy that works, that was not planned out because they figured out one movie and then had to write two more. Where the character arc in the first movie is if the first movie is the only one that exists and you want to make the argument Marty McFly is the main character, I'm not going to argue with you because he's certainly the focal point of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the overarching story, the hero's tale of the Back to the Future trilogy, and you look for character growth, it's Doc Emmett Brown. And specifically, it's the growth of the Doc Emmett Brown character. And the reason why I call it as one of the greatest character journeys in movie history is it was not pre-thought. It wasn't like somebody sat down with pen to paper and figured this out. They weaved this together through three movies seamlessly, and the character grows in each one.
Mm-hmm. I remember the story. They even asked like Michael J. Fox when they were talking about a second one, what kind of time period do you want to go back to? He said, I would go back to the Old West and, you know, meet up with cowboys. Like, that's a good idea. We'll save that one for the third one. And then just that little conversation turned into this great movie that we're talking about here tonight.
And the introduction of Clara, you know, not just as like a shallow love interest, as it was done so much in the time of Back to the Future, because a lot of times they would throw a love interest in. Like, even if you look at Jennifer, and they replaced Jennifer in the series with Elizabeth Shue, but it's kind of a thankless role overall. She passes out in the second movie. It is kind of the catalyst for why things need to happen, but is not really a part of the trilogy at all, other than reacting to Marty.
Yep.
Where Clara, for all intents and purposes, inspires Doc Brown. Isn't just like the driving force because he's chasing her, but inspires him to be more than he is. Right? Because she expects more of him. She's a very deep character. And it's nothing against the actresses playing them. I think Elizabeth Shue does exactly what was asked of her in the Back to the Future series. Mary Steenburgen does exactly what was asked of her, but she was asked to do more.
That's Double Back by ZZ Top from the album Recycler and from the movie Back to the Future 3. And in typical late 80s, early 90s ZZ Top fashion, you get a song that's under 4 minutes, 1 minute of which has lyrics. The rest is just a band jamming out.
Who's playing guitar on that outro?
Well, that'd be Billy Gibbons.
I mean, that is just some remarkable stuff on that outro. All of it, them jamming out together is incredible. But I'm a guitar guy, and the guitar really stuck out to me. And I should have known it was Billy Gibbons, because we talked about him so much in the episode, but I'm old and I have brain farts. And that's another theme of this episode, is don't get old, kids.
There you go. And Billy Gibbons, one of the greatest guitar players out there. I think a little underrated, but I tell you what, he's been listed he's been listed by like Rolling Stone and other places as being one of the top guitar players of all time.
Yeah, I really wish you would have finished that sentence. He was listed as ZZ Top as one of the greatest guitarists of all time.
That's right. ZZ Top themselves said he is one of the greatest guitar players of all time. It's been a long day for me too. What do you say we put a bow on this one, John? Final thoughts on Back to the Future 3. There's really not much more to say. I think it's a classic film. Good on Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale for writing these films along with Bob Zemeckis. Wonderful trilogy. Go check them out. And Back to the Future 3 is an absolute wonderful movie.
I think it puts a bow on a perfect trilogy. If you don't think it's a perfect trilogy, please tweet at me at John Mariano NY on Twitter, and I will tell you why your opinion is wrong. Corey, I didn't even question you when you picked. I want to do the third movie first with this trilogy. I really think it highlights how good this movie is, how underrated it is, and I think that's a lot of what this little show we do is when we have the chance to spotlight something that's near and dear to our heart, and because of your father, this is near and dear to your heart, but also because it's a great movie, man.
Absolutely. This one's for you, Dad, even though I know you're not listening, because he knows I podcast, but he definitely doesn't know what the fuck a podcast is or how to listen to it. But I did this one for my old man. He loves Westerns, and he loves Back to the Future 3. Let's put a bow on this one, my friend. You can always catch us as part of the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Go to deepdivepodcastnetwork.com. Follow us on Twitter. Catch all the great shows on the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Before I'm going to throw it to John right now, and I'm going to double check that web address. So you go ahead, John. Tell us what you got to promote, plug, anything like that.
Sure. I would like everybody to, as soon as this podcast ends, get on Amazon and go look up our friend Scott Haskin. Scott has a book series out right now called The Universal Court. The trilogy is book one, book two, and book three of Universal Court. If you look up Scott Haskin, you can buy those books. I highly recommend that you get these books. Dives into the world of law and really gets into the court system a little bit. I'm not going to spoil anything. You can read about it. go to the website. I'm reading them right now, and I'm a big fan, and I'm not a big fan because he's a friend of the show. I'm a big fan because Scott's a terrific writer and really has a lot to say.
Well said, my friend. Let's leave it at that. On behalf of John Mariano, my name is Corey Marcet. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
We got ourselves a new courthouse. High time we had a hanging.
I'll shoot the fleas off a dog's back at 500 yards, Tannen, and it's pointed straight at your head.
You owe me money, blacksmith.
How do you figure?
My horse threw a shoe. And seeing as you was the one that done the shoe, and I say that makes you responsible.
Well, since you never paid me for that job, I say that makes us even.
Wrong. See, I was on my horse when it threw the shoe, and I got thrown off. And that caused me to bust a perfectly good bottle of fine Kentucky Red Eye. So the way I figure it, blacksmith, you owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
That's $80.
Look, if your horse threw a shoe, bring him back and I'll reshoe him.
I done shot that horse.
Well, that's your problem, Tannen.
Wrong. That's yours. So from now on, you better be looking behind you when you walk. Because one day you're going to get a bullet in your back. Hyah!
Marty, I gave you explicit instructions not to come here, but to go directly back to 1985.
I know, Doc, but I had to come.
But it's good to see you, Marty.